Our next speaker is going to be Carrie Steenworth. Her title, Vineyard Microbial Populations or Microbial Communities Shift with Changes in Soil Resources. So Carrie Steenworth.
Thank you. So today I'm going to talk to you about this topic. I joined a project that was initiated 5 years before I joined the project. There are a number of papers that have come from it. This project looked at the effects of cover cropping and tillage on nematode populations and their distribution, weed communities, grapevine nutrition, and also soil erosion. And these papers are published underneath Smith et al. 2008 in California Agriculture, which you can access through the UC Davis website. The heterogeneity in the vineyard affects the soil properties and the microbial communities. For instance, Shane Parker, who's studying the nematode populations, has shown that you have fairly harmless nematodes underneath the cover crops. If you move just a foot or so inward underneath the grapevine, you have more of the parasitic nematodes. There seems to be a great disconnect. So for those people who are interested in utilizing different cover crops to control nematodes, for instance, this is a great consideration. I'm not going to talk about nematodes right now. So I'm done with my sales pitch for those other papers. And I'll move on to my topic. So my hypothesis here was that microbial activity, microbial communities, they'll both differ among vineyard floor treatments in season. And I had previous knowledge that the cover crop biomass varied between the two cover crops over the course of the year. So I hypothesized that soil resources would differ over time, that I would see a seasonal shift in microbial communities with respect to this biomass input. I also knew that root biomass differed from 0 to 10 centimeters and 10 centimeters to 20 centimeters. So you can see that the two cover crop species would also have different resource inputs over time. And finally, from annual cropping systems, it's been shown that tillage can have a very strong and immediate effect on soil microbial community composition. I conducted the study in Greenfield, Monterey County, and this is about 35 miles south of Salinas, which you might know as the home of John Steinbeck. And the climate was a Mediterranean climate. There's cool, moist winters and hot, dry summers. So not only was management and the growth of the cover crop a factor in determining soil carbon and nitrogen dynamics, but also microbial communities, or at least that's the hypothesis. The rainfall was 32 centimeters. That's the 10-year mean, and then the mean daily temperature for air was 8 degrees centigrade in winter and 19 degrees centigrade in summer. Just to emphasize, for those of you who are not familiar or have not experienced a year in Mediterranean climate, we have all of our rain coming in the winter season. So you can see on the top graph, it's very bunched together. It's sporadic as well, various wet, dry cycles. And then from basically May until October, we have no rain. So we have a great extreme here. You can see on the lower graph that soil temperature is low during the wet months on the left-hand side of the graph, and it increases in the summertime. And the soil moisture content has an inverse relationship. Okay. One thing I wanted to mention about the climate is that in these situations, in a vineyard like this, the growers in this region will actually start filling up their soil profile earlier in the season. They'll start in January, and even though the bud break won't happen until April. So it's a pretty dry area that this study was conducted in. The vineyard is a Chardonnay on Selecki 5C rootstock. The vineyard was planted in 1997 on 6 by 8 foot spacing, and I think that's 2.4 meters by 1.8 meter. It's a coarse loamy mixed superactive thermic cumulic haplozerol. We did a bunch of soil pits, and the soil texture had no variance from 0 to 1 meter, so it's a very coarse soil. And then the treatments that were established 5 years before I conducted my study were Trios 102, which is triticale by triticale. We had Merced rye, another grain, and cultivation. And as I mentioned at the first slide, they have different growth patterns. So one establishes and puts down roots and very little above ground biomass at the beginning of its growth cycle, whereas the other one puts a lot more energy into putting biomass above ground. We also had a cultivation treatment, and the intent there was to keep the vineyard floor clean only through cultivation. There were no herbicides applied during the study. So when the vineyard floor root weed biomass reached about 30% cover, if they could get into the field, if it wasn't too wet, they would run it through and disking down to about 8 inches. And as I mentioned before, I joined in the fifth year of the trial. So what I'm going to show you is just a series of photos so that you get a feel for what the vineyard looked like when the measurements were made. We began the study in the fall in November, and what you can see here is that the vines are going dormant. This is a picture of one of the cover crop treatments, so you can still see residue on the surface, and there's some weed growth. The soils were slightly prepped before seedling establishment, or before the cover crops were seeded. Oops. Here we are in the winter, and you can see that the cover crop's up, the vines are dormant, and that the pruning's occurring. And you see on the bottom that there's the cultivated treatment, and it's fairly clean right now in the winter. In the spring, you can see that bud break has occurred. The Trios and the Merced rye are up. They've achieved the same height. And then the cultivation treatment in this picture has just been treated. And it also looks fairly clean. This is probably right about April, and right around this time when bud break occurs, a lot of growers will till in their cover crops to avoid any sort of damage from frost. And one more thing is that Bowerly et al. Has recently published a paper, I believe in 2009 or 2008, showing that right around bud break, there's also a root flush that occurs on a lot of different rootstocks. And so this will be important when thinking about nitrogen dynamics in the study at the conclusion. Okay, and here we are in summer. We see that the Merced rye, it also looks very similar to the Trios. We still have residue on the top, and then the cultivation also has some weed growth in the wheel tracks over on the right-hand side, and just about this time, they'll probably go through again and cultivate it. And in this situation, there were 3 to 5 tillage passes, and so that's kind of a lot, but in some of the places that I worked in the Central Valley, they'll often go through and till their field 3 to 5 times a year for weed control or just to prep it so that it's smoothed out for equipment. So I think that this isn't just, I think these results will be applicable to other regions. Okay, what I'm going to show you now are a series of graphs that look at the microbial activity that was measured in these different treatments over the 4 seasons or 5 seasons. I only have 4 right now up here, but what I want you to notice is that on the x-axis, we have fall, winter, spring, and summer, the different seasons. On the y-axis, we have the rates. And what's important to note is that the cultivated bar, which is in black, for all of these activities tends to be lower than the two gray bars for the cover crop. So the activity of the microbial community is lower in the cultivated treatments than it is in the cover crop treatments. And there seems to be no effect of species of the cover crop on the activity. So this either suggests that there's no temporal effect, or the effect of having cover crops there over the last 5 years has washed out any effect of the cover crops, of their growth over time. The activity rates do shift just a tiny bit in the denitrification potentials among seasons, and then you can see that in spring for the potential nitrification by slurry on the top graph does go down in spring. So there is just a tiny bit of seasonal effect. Here's a graph from a larger study where I was studying the effects of these cover cropping practices on soil carbon and nitrogen dynamics. And what I want you to pull out of these two graphs is that the potential nitrogen mineralization on top and the microbial biomass nitrogen on the bottom, that the two cover crop treatments have higher rates of nitrogen mineralization than the cultivated field, and that the microbial biomass nitrogen pool is greater in the cover crops than in the cultivated treatment. You can also see that there is some temporal change in these pools and activities over time. And then finally, this is a very similar graph to the one you've just seen. There's microbial biomass carbon on the top graph, respiration, it's a potential measurement that was done by incubation in the lab, that is on the bottom graph. And what you can see is that the microbial biomass carbon and microbial activity for respiration are greater in the cover crop treatments than the cultivated, and that there is some temporal change in the carbon availability as measured by microbial respiration among the treatments over time. Okay, so we've established that these pools and activities of microbes are greater in cover crops than cultivated soils. So what's the relationship between these findings and the community that exists in the soil? Do we see a change that corresponds to the changes in community that corresponds to the changes in activity? We use phospholipid fatty acids to measure the composition of the microbial community. Phospholipid fatty acids are rapidly degraded after microbial cell death and provide a profile of the living soil microbial community. The phospholipid fatty acids located in the phospholipid bilayer, they correspond to both a physiological and an identity of the microbes that are there, the physiological status and both their identity. So it integrates both of those. It can't identify the microbial community in the same way or the same detail as a DNA-based approach, but it does give you some idea of larger groups like gram-negative, gram-positive bacteria, fungi, and actinomycetes. We'll take these PLFA, and they are analyzed on a gas chromatograph. So what you see here on the right is the printout from three different soils that comes from the gas chromatograph. So each peak is a PLFA, and certain peaks are unique to specific groups of microbial organisms. The mass of all peaks gives an estimate of the biomass, and then all peaks together make a community fingerprint. So you can imagine that having 40 samples would be hard to just visually look at each of these graphs and figure out which one's different and how they relate to each other. So we use multivariate statistics to look at the relationship between the soil microorganisms and from the different treatments. So what you see here is a canonical correspondence analysis, and what I want you to get out of this graph is that each of these points represents the composition of the soil microbial community that was taken from a soil sample. The closer the points are together, the more similar they are in terms of their community composition, and likewise, the farther away they are from each other, the less similar they are. Oops. What you can see is that the cultivated fallow soil microbial communities are different, they're in red, from the cover crop microbial communities. But there is no differentiation among soil microbial communities and the cover crops. And again, this goes along with the activity and pool measurements that I showed you. There was really no difference among those pools. So these are somewhat congruent. We can also look at the constrain the microbial communities by their environmental factors or their nutrient pools to understand what might be explaining the distribution in the microbial communities among treatments. You might think about this as kind of like a multiple regression. And what you can see, when you interpret this, the closer or the more acute the angle is of these vectors, these arrows on here, are with the axis, the more tightly correlated they are with that axis. Again, the smaller the angle that the vectors have with each other also means that they're positively correlated with each other. So what you can see, what I'd like you to get from this graph, is that microbial communities of cover crops show positive associations with enhanced microbial communities, microbial activity. And perhaps this is somewhat redundant because we could have deduced that from the other graphs I showed you. But it's good to see that they corroborate each other. Okay. Within each of those large clusters, if you inspect them, you can see there might be a seasonal effect. And if you recall, we have this very extreme gradient in gravimetric water content and rainfall patterns and soil temperature. So I hypothesized that that would also be a factor. So here we have the cultivated treatment. Each of these points in the different color represent a different season. And you can see that there is a seasonal effect on the microbial communities that are from the cultivated treatment. I also saw a similar pattern with the cover crop treatments. I'm not showing you this data in the interest of time. We can see in this case that the factors that were important in explaining the variation in gravimetric in these cultivated soils were the abiotic factors, gravimetric water content and soil temperature. But in the cover crops, the soil resources were more important in explaining the distribution of the soil microorganisms according to season. Okay, and these tended to correspond to plant phenology. Okay, so we saw that there was enhanced soil function from cover crops, that microbial communities differ by cultivation and cover crop presence, but not cover crop type. This is consistent with other studies and other natural ecosystems that have not seen plant species effects. And microbial communities with a given management type shift with season, and this has also been seen in other annual cropping systems and perennial and annual grasslands. I have a few closing thoughts. From the grower's perspective, it may be sufficient to know that microbial functions are improved by certain practices. Although I think that philosophically, from speaking with growers, that knowing that they're affecting a change in their composition of the microbial community is something that they would really like to know. And this might be a bit of a stretch, but I also think that they're, by understanding the microbial community changes and also that they're feeding their soil, this allows the growers a way to market their practices. Because if you think about it, they're doing the practices in the row middles, and you know the vines are over here, and you know sometimes there's sort of a disconnect, especially since they're irrigating the row. But what they can show is that we might be able to hypothesize that with this increased nitrogen content in the cover crop soils and in dry cropping systems, and also in some of the irrigated systems, we've shown that there is an interaction between the grapevine roots and the uptake of nitrogen, that they can say in their marketing systems that they're providing this extra ecosystem service. They're enhancing their system by having cover crops there. That there is not a disconnect. And then from a practical standpoint, I'm probably undermining my presentation right now, but I think that it might be better if we spend more time looking at maximizing the functional diversity and maybe not the compositional diversity of our soil microbial communities. And I think I'll leave it at that because I feel like I just made a real blasphemous statement in the microbial ecology world. I think that and in a practical setting that might be more important than understanding our composition. So thank you.
We have time for one question for Carrie.